to scream at him, to rage against the injustice he'd visited upon her. He leaned back against the door, arms folded, eyeing her. She backed away from him toward the curtains, feeling sick to her stomach. Why had she even left Meerwood to begin with? The Aldermaston had admonished her to stay. Why hadn't she listened to his wisdom? Will tugged loose the collar knot of his shirt and flung it onto the floor.
Come, Sarah. No matter what you do, you'll be blamed for an indiscretion. The least you can do is earn it.
Is that supposed to convince me to go along with this? Sarah said furiously. How do you know you'll be paid for this, Mr. Russell? The same people betraying me will turn on you. You know too much. If you can be bought once, you can be sold twice. Don't you understand? Do you even know who is behind this?
Do I care?
He shot back, growing flushed with anger.
My father was left penniless because of people like you. He was robbed, just as you are being robbed. It was your fault that you dragged me into that accursed maze. Well, at least it will benefit me now.
You're deceiving yourself, she said, backing farther away. She felt the fabric of the curtains brush against her back. This won't end well for either of us.
Well, you've certainly dashed my hopes thus far,
he countered.
I thought you'd be more willing to indulge.
Her mind was working furiously. The curtains led to windows and to a street. This wasn't the Fells, it was a respectable neighborhood. Or at least she hoped so. How soon before they come for us? She asked.
Soon enough, darling,
he answered spitefully. Sarah closed her eyes. Drawing on her fragile will, she summoned the Leering's light, needing it to help her see the window and its latch. It wouldn't respond to her at all this time, and her failure struck her as hard as a physical blow. But still, she wouldn't quit. Turning, she shoved the curtain aside and tried to find the latch in the dark.
What are you doing?
She found it and torqued it open. The window was heavy, but it pushed outward.
No!
Will shouted, starting to run across the room. Sarah got her foot on the sill, grabbed the frame with both hands, and pulled herself up. If she allowed him the opportunity, he would grab her again, pull her back into the room. He'd pin her on the floor if he had to. And so she jumped from the window without a second's hesitation. The cold, misty air rushed against her face until she struck the hard cobblestones with bone-jarring force. Landing on her forearms and knees, she got to her feet and started running down the alley. She didn't look back. But she did remember, at the last moment, that her hat and veil had been left behind in the dark room.
The test has evolved over the centuries, because the conditions on this world have changed. Exposure to other worlds similar to our own has broadened our knowledge. Intelligent people can observe the same facts, but disagree as to the interpretation of them. Such is the case with neighboring worlds. Such is the case among our own people. Each student at the Abbey comes to learn the general principles behind the mysteries, the power of thought and its alchemic effects. They learn that if they control their thinking, they may commune with the knowing and harness knowledge capable of benefiting the various worlds. Then each student chooses a discipline, and is taught the gifts that have already been bestowed therein. The varieties of musical instruments, the wonder that a brush dipped in paint can bestow, the laws of momentum and matter, the intricacies of deeds, and the stratagems of war and power. All of these things are taught during their years of study here. But there are vital truths held back until the test. Truths that must be experienced firsthand. For some students, these truths are terrifying. They go against their wishes, perhaps even their personal beliefs. But it is our duty and calling, as ministers of the mysteries, to gather in every item of truth and reject every error. We must be willing to receive the truth, let it come from whom it may. truth embraces all morality, all virtue, all light, all intelligence, all greatness, and all goodness. It introduces a system of laws. It circumscribes the theories of the day. If we understood, for example, the process of creation, there would be no mystery about it. It would be all reasonable and plain, for there is no mystery except to the ignorant.
Thomas Abraham, Aldermaston of Mirwood Abbey. SETI. Chapter 28. The Test. The day for SETI's test had finally come, and she waited nervously in the Aldermaston's manor. The sitting room was full of people she knew and cared about, for she and Finia and Adam had been allowed to wait together with their visiting family, as was customary. Lady Merrin had come earlier to help Anna recuperate from her harrowing experience, escorted by Stephen in the family Tempest, and all three of them were present. He was currently teasing Finia about taking the test, telling her she wasn't prepared for it and would likely fail. His smirk revealed he didn't believe it, but it bothered SETI that he would choose such a time to tease his sister. If only Sarah were there with her, they'd exchange a look, and both would know what the other was thinking. Why hadn't Sarah returned from Lockhaven yet? The last letter she'd gotten from her friend was about her visit to Pavenham Sky. Surely it was a good sign that the mysteries had whispered to her and allowed her to recognize the prince. SETI had written back asking when Sarah would be coming back for the test, and sent her a sprig of lavender. She'd gotten nothing in return. She was worried about her. Perhaps, as a Fitz Empress, she could take the test at her own convenience. But even so... Adam stood at the window, hands clasped behind his back, gazing out at the bright sunlight. His posture put her in mind of Fitzroy, a thought that helped calm her uneasy mind. She looked away from him when Lady Merrin rose from the couch she shared with Anna and came over to sit by her. Putting her arm around SETI's back and hugging her, she asked, "Are you nervous?"
"Of course she is. What student isn't?" Stephen quipped. "I'm grateful the test is over. For me, anyway."
"You are so rude, Stephen," Finia complained.
"I don't know why they even bother with it," he said flippantly. "While I worry about Finia passing, I have no doubt that SETI will. I've heard good things about her progress. She's quite envied."
Praise from him was rare, and SETI felt her cheeks flush. Lady Merrin rubbed her back.
"There will be much to think about. I didn't understand it very well at the time I took it. But I do agree with Stephen. You will do well. The vigil will help heighten your senses. It will make the experience more meaningful."
"And then we can all have a nap this afternoon," Stephen drawled with an exaggerated yawn.
He had been less than pleased to sacrifice his sleep with them, as was customary. Finia swatted his arm. "And what about you, Dr. Cray? Are you nervous?" Adam looked away from the window.
"Not in the least. I'm intrigued by it." "Spoken with all the dispassion of a physician," Stephen said.
His target's expression changed not at all.
"I'm jesting, man. I have no doubt you'll pass."
A knock sounded on the door, and when it opened, Aunt Juliana entered with Colton Forshee.
"Aunt Juliana!"
Finia exclaimed, rushing forward to hug her. Lady Merrin rose from the couch and embraced her sister next.
"I didn't know you were coming back so soon."
"I didn't want to miss the opportunity to see them before the test," Juliana said, smiling brightly. "It wasn't easy leaving Lockhaven."
"Who is this?" Merrin asked.
"Colton Forshee, at your service," he said, bowing to her. "I begged a ride from Captain Juliana."
SETI noticed he was standing rather close to her.
"I'm grateful you returned," Merrin said to him. "I wanted to thank you in person for saving my daughter."
"Your husband was gracious enough to already thank me back at Lockhaven, ma'am," he said with reserved tone. "And truly, it was the mystery's will, not mine. The villain who attacked us has left these shores. It seems likely he returned to King Fountain. I think that threat has ended.
Well, another has begun, Juliana said. She frowned. This incident won't end here at Mirwood. The council suspects King Fountain is after a war, and the Prime Minister has ordered Lord Wells to put the military on high alert. All available young men are being conscripted.
Her gaze flashed to Adam standing by the window.
Seti saw a look of growing dread on his face.
Truly?
He asked in a half whisper. Juliana nodded.
All the graduates from this year have been given their commissions, but the Ministry of War is conscripting doctors to serve in the fleet. I'm sorry, Adam, but I've no doubt you'll be one of them.
His mouth turned to a frown as the disappointment came crashing down on him. His whole face twitched with emotion.
Seti's heart panged to see his hopes dashed so thoroughly, and right before the test. She could only imagine how he felt.
But the cholera morbus,
he said with forced control.
We haven't learned the source or even the cure. If all the doctors are taken, many will die needlessly.
The ministry is calling for strict quarantines, Juliana said. The sickness comes and goes. No one knows why.
I know,
Adam said angrily.
He clenched his jaw and started to pace.
Such are the vagaries of life. I've never had a desire to serve in the Ministry of War. None at all.
Lady Maren spoke what they were all wondering.
What about my husband?
Juliana frowned and shook her head.
I don't know. I couldn't get anyone to tell me anything about it.
He has served in the Ministry of War before. Maybe they'll ask him to relinquish his position and take a command.
It felt as though a cloud had blotted out the sun.
War was truly coming. The cycle was repeating itself once again, inexorable, like time itself.
Might I have a word with Seti and Anna?
Calton said in the somber moment following Juliana's pronouncement.
Of course,
Lady Maren answered, her face suddenly ashen. Her husband was being ripped away from her. Even Finia looked shocked by the news, and Stephen had lost color. No doubt he was pondering his own fate. Anna rose from her couch and then hurried over to sit beside Seti. The two girls gripped each other's hands. Calton approached them there, and he squatted in front of them.
You look better than you did the other night,
he told Anna.
But still shaken, I see. Still haunted.
I am, Anna confessed. It was a living nightmare. It felt like I was trapped in my own mind.
Calton nodded.
I'm sure it did. I took the liberty of talking to your father. He said that you used to have night terrors in your childhood.
Anna squirmed.
Yes.
Seti remembered them well.
Mrs. Pullman had had cruel ways of controlling everyone in the household who didn't meet her personal standards. Her thoughts turned dark.
You still have 2 more years at school before you will take the test. When you do, you will have a better understanding of what happened to you that night. What you need to know now is that it was not your fault, not one bit. If I may, I would recommend that you consider the mysteries of thought as you continue your studies. The knowledge imparted in those classes may help you. I hope it does. And I truly hope you can leave what happened behind you. You were abducted. That would terrify anyone. But it doesn't have to rule you.
He patted Anna on her knee and then turned to Seti.
All I wanted to say to you, Miss Seti, is that even though you've studied the mysteries of wind, you clearly have a talent for the mysteries of thought as well. That you could use the Crusader orb at all is quite remarkable. I teach at Billerbeck Abbey. I should like you to visit me someday, so we can talk further about your experiences in the Fells. There is much I would learn from you.
Seti was taken aback by his praise and interest. She'd never imagined it was possible to do what he had done in the woods beyond the abbey. She would like to learn from him, and was honored that he thought he could learn from her, too. The door opened again. The time had come. All the students who had finished their fourth year were gathered into two groups, male and female. They'd all spent the night with their families in various sitting rooms at the manor. The teachers whom they had studied under then helped them into robes that fit over their regular clothes. The robes were light gray cassocks that extended down to their ankles, with hooded shawls that draped across their shoulders and could be lifted to cover their heads and faces. They were instructed not to look at the other students as they entered the abbey, which they would do from the outer doors. Mrs. Romrell helped Ceti into her robes and smiled encouragingly at her all the while. Before they were separated, Ceti gave Finia's hand a reassuring squeeze. She looked very nervous, no doubt the product of her brother's teasing. They were then escorted from the Aldermaston's manor, single file, and led down a small footpath to one of the abbey's arched doorways. Ceti looked up at the spire. The mid-morning breeze caressed her face, carrying all the gentle fragrances from the grounds. For 4 years she had passed by this structure, feeling the strength of its protective leerings. The music they made together seemed to thrum against her skin, giving her a feeling of awe. This structure had been built hundreds of years ago. The stone was flecked with lichen, but it had endured storms and ice for generations. It had endured wars, too. There was comfort in that. She was not the first to take the test, nor would she be the last. This moment linked her to so many other moments that would come before and after. As they neared the arched doorway, which was held open by two of the teachers, Ceti felt the leering set in the keystone glare down at them. It exuded a powerful feeling of fear and dread. Ceti saw one of the girls ahead of her trembling with agitation, but she dared not comfort her. They'd been instructed not to speak to one another. As they neared the threshold, the girl halted, quailing in fear. She stepped away from the line and started back toward the manor, tears streaming from her eyes. Ceti bit her lip, sorry for the girl who hadn't been able to tame the leering. It was strange, but while she, too, could feel the warning and foreboding emanating from the leering, it was more like the drone of a bumblebee collecting pollen than the warning of an angry wasp threatening to sting. Ceti followed the other girls into the abbey. The walls shone with leering light, and a feeling of intense peace surrounded her. Just past the doorway, two female teachers were helping the students remove their shoes. The girls continued in just their stockings. The walls were intricately designed, she noticed. The trim was inlaid with gold leaf, and the polished stone tiles fit together at angles to form interlocking geometric shapes. It was like staring at an equation from one of her mathematics classes, and she was so distracted by the sight she nearly collided into the girl in front of her who had paused. The line led to a door, which in turn led to a stairway, leading to a level below the abbey. They were surrounded by the deepest quiet, but leerings were carved into the walls at regular intervals, and there were bouquets of flowers in huge stone urns. To Ceti, it felt as if she had come home. When they reached the bottom doorway, it opened into a larger room full of heavy wooden benches. There were two sections, slit in the middle by an aisle, and Ceti watched as the young men in their robes filed in to the opposite side. They had entered the abbey from another door, but the destination was still the same. She tried to spot Adam, but instead caught Mr. Skrelling's eye. He quirked a smile at her and nodded. Ceti nodded back before taking her seat on the bench. When all the students had entered, save those who hadn't made it past the first test, the teachers closed the doors and then stood in front of them, as if guarding the gathering from intruders. Ceti waited in anticipation, feeling at once eager and nervous. She was sitting on the end of one of the benches, so she risked another glance across the aisle. Adam was sitting just across from her, head bowed in concentration. Seeing him so close made her wonder if fate had arranged it. The Aldermaston of Mirwood entered from an alcove at the head of the room. His gray cassock matched theirs. He supported himself on a cane and winced as he ambled forward. One of the teachers came to help him, but he waved the man back. The sound of his shuffling steps and the thump of the cane on the tiles mixed with his labored breathing. The Aldermaston's face was strained, but he was clearly determined to perform his duty. When he reached the front, he paused to catch his breath and supported his weight on the cane. His forearms trembled with the effort.
"My young friends," he said at last. "For many years I have officiated in this ceremony. I worried that I would lack the strength to do so this time. But I am supported by your kind thoughts and by the excellent teachers at this school. Forgive me,"
he paused, wincing again, and waited a moment for the pain to subside.
"At this abbey, you have been tutored in the mysteries. We do not know them all, nor can we, because of our finite human minds. You have learned how to listen for the whispers that connect us to the power and wisdom of the knowing. Some of you have practiced this and gained wisdom. Some of you think it is a farce and have progressed very little. Some of you have used this power to persecute one another. You each have your choice, and you will reap the fruits you have planted by your industry, or your neglect."
He coughed, and then his voice became stronger.
"When each generation builds on the knowledge of its forebears, the whole of civilization progresses. This ritual differs from bygone days because our knowledge of truth has so expanded. But there is something they knew that you do not. It is the mystery I will explain to you now before you take the test."
Seti leaned slightly forward, attentive to his every word. She quieted her mind, trying to muster her courage and her belief.
"What I speak now is the truth insofar as we comprehend it. When our world was created and organized by the power of the mysteries, it was not uninhabited. Before, the first parents were stationed in a garden of leerings meant to protect and shield them. There were other beings who walked the craters and hissing storms of this planet. They were called the Myriad Ones, the Unborn. They had a queen, Ereshkigal, who persuaded the first parents to partake of the fruit that made them mortal. It was her intent to forestall their progress, to prevent them from building cities of stone that would sail the skies and visit other worlds. For many thousands of years, Ereshkigal was successful in her quest to stamp out light and twist truth. Her goal is to turn this world back into ashes."
Seti felt a shiver go down her back.
"But in the days of the first empress, Maya Sullivan, Ereshkigal was trapped in a leering, confined in a prison of stone. Her followers, those with mortal blood, were all hunted down and destroyed. The First Empire grew, and with it came a season of peace and prosperity unlike anything our people had yet experienced. The mysteries began to be revealed in numerous and advantageous ways, all because the people honored the truths that they had learned."
His brow furrowed, and he frowned.
"But those are no longer our days. Prosperity and wealth have brought pride and cunning. In the past, the Myriad Ones feasted on the baser emotions of mankind. They marauded the world in the guise of animals and serpents. Now, they walk among us. The people call them ghosts and believe them to be the spirits of the dead, but that is not the truth. They are still the servants of their dark queen, and they seek a way to free her. No one knows where the leering confining her is located. For if it were known, there are those among us just cruel and selfish enough to seek to free her and unleash her terror once again on the world. These ghosts, these ancient demons, seek to possess our corporeal bodies. They do this through our hearts, our emotions, which they touch with their thoughts and even with their fingers.
His voice became grimmer, more solemn.
You may think I am jesting with you. I assure you I am not. Since you came to the age of understanding, the age in which your minds begin to quicken, a wrestle started over control for your thoughts. You have been sought after by the knowing, which has encouraged and whispered to you to seek out truth, and you have been seduced by the myriad ones who wish to take possession of your thoughts, your very bodies, to do unspeakable evil. Some, a very rare few, are so sensitive to these creatures that they can actually see them with their natural eyes.
He paused and said he swallowed.
Most of us cannot, which makes it difficult to discern which dark thoughts come from them. You may believe you yourself are the source of all of your negative thoughts. This is not true. But we are, each of us, culpable for our actions, our choices. To guard yourself from these beings, and to remind yourself of what you have learned here, you will each be given a chain and a pendant, which you will wear close to your heart. This pendant will repel the myriad ones, and prevent them from entering your body through your heart. If you ever take it off, you will be at risk to them.
Seti blinked quickly, feeling tears prick her eyes. Could she be safe from her ghosts at last? A spark of hope brightened inside her.
You may wonder why this knowledge has been kept as the final mystery. Why we allow others to suffer from these demons, these evil spirits. In the past, this knowledge was shared with all. Indeed, Empress Maya made provisions for everyone to learn. But some began to mock what they were taught, to doubt it and scoff at it. Visitors from other worlds called us heretics, and built towers in an attempt to reach our floating cities. Remember, those who want to free Ereshkigal desire the earth to burn, to revert back to its primeval chaos. The truth will always make the ignorant angry, whether they be ignorant out of choice or lack of opportunity. For the myriad ones despise truth and light above all. Your test, my young friends, is to face your fear and release a demon trapped in a leering here inside the abbey. You will command it to learn its true name, and then confine it again. It will try to possess you. Guard your thoughts. This is your test. Stand when you are called.
Chapter 29 Banir Expiare. One by one, the students were called forward and taken by a teacher into the alcove. Since none of them returned, Seti assumed that they were permitted to leave when the test was over. She was nervous. No, that wasn't even the right word to describe her feelings. Her insides were twisting into knots. All her life, these myriad ones, these ethereal beings, had tormented her. She was more than a little afraid to face them. She glanced over to Adam and found his head bowed in deep concentration. Despite the news from earlier that he would likely be summoned to use his skills to aid the Ministry of War, he looked calm.
His calm infiltrated her, giving her the peace she needed to face the test ahead. Adam turned his head then, and their eyes met. He offered her a reassuring smile.
You can do this, Seti.
She felt his thought brush against her mind. Smiling back at him, she gave him a small nod.
You will do well, Adam. I know you will.
She wasn't sure if he could hear her. He didn't react to the little thought push she sent him, but his little nudge of encouragement helped enormously. She waited, hands folded in her lap, and began to slow her breathing and calm her fears. In the Abbey, she was safe. They would not give her an experience she could not handle. They wished for her and all of them to succeed. Soon she was wrapped in a cocoon of magic. Her thoughts and fears had calmed. When they called her name, she rose steadily from the bench and passed the empty rows in front of her. To her surprise, it wasn't a teacher waiting for her at the alcove, or at least not one of her teachers. It was Calton Forshee. He gave her a slight nod, and she fell in next to him as he escorted her through a gray-painted door. The corridor beyond was lit with leerings.
I begged permission from the Aldermaston,
he said softly as they walked.
I wanted to be the one to introduce you to this mystery. At Billerbeck, this is my favorite part of being a teacher. The most rewarding.
She gave him an inquisitive look.
Why is that?
All of your years of preparation and schooling will finally come to fruition. People have different experiences taking the test. Some are terrified by it and never want to return to an abbey again. Others require years of reflection to understand the ritual. But still others, and I believe you might be one of them, are transformed by the experience. It starts them on a path to fulfill their destiny. I cannot take the test for you, Seti. But I will be close. You can do this.
She'd heard the same sentiment from Adam, and their faith in her comforted her all the more. At the end of the corridor, her way was blocked by a door made of stone with a leering carved into it. Calton paused in front of the door and then turned to face her.
The First Empress was powerful with leerings. Her meekness was such that all leerings desired to obey her. She had a gift called invocation, which enabled her to create them. She created the first leerings that could bind the myriad ones, trap them into stone. When she began to do this, they fled from her and from her cities. Above all, they desire freedom of action, freedom of movement. They covet what we have and seek to force us to surrender our freedom of will to them. As you pass this leering, you will walk down a corridor made of pillars, each with a leering. Certain gifts require covenants. You must agree to the terms to receive the knowledge of how to bind the myriad ones. From here, you are on your own. But I will be watching you. You are never truly alone, Seti.
She gave him a nod of respect and appreciation, steeling herself to face the leerings ahead. Otherworldly music spouted from beyond the stone door. Already she could sense it, feel it tingling against her skin. Powerful emotions surged inside of her. Not fear, however, but a feeling of certainty. Of welcome, even.
Go,
Calton said with a smile. As Seti approached the stone door, it opened at the slightest push of her thoughts. The stone door closed behind her. She felt and heard the leerings before she saw them. It was a symphony of sound, but she could pick apart the various instruments easily. Each leering represented an oath she must take. But these weren't requirements or restrictions. They were empowering. To revere and not profane the knowing. To keep her body and mind chaste. To never pollute herself with any substance that would lessen her willpower. To speak the truth. To protect the innocent if within her power. To contribute to the feeding of the poor. To tame anger and malice. to willingly give of her means to allow others to be taught the way of the mysteries. To never reveal the covenants she made to outsiders. There were 9 in all, and she made them willingly, wholeheartedly, eagerly. A thrum of approval came from the pillars as they fell silent. 2 leerings began to exude mist at the far side of the room. She felt she should walk into it, and so she strode down the corridor purposefully. The mist bathed her face so thick that she could not see far ahead, and then she could see nothing at all. She put her hands forward to avoid bumping into something, but light appeared from another leering just ahead of her. As she approached, she realized it was a pair of glowing eyes. This leering was carved into a plinth, a polished sheath of stone that was sculpted into an obelisk as high as her chest. The top formed a pyramid. The burning eyes of the leering revealed a gold chain slung across the pyramid. The medallion threaded onto it was the 8-pointed star, the symbol of the Mastins. She felt instinctively that she should put it on. Seti reached out and touched the necklace. It was warm to the touch. She slipped it over her hair and let the medallion dangle in front of her bodice. But that felt wrong. The Aldermaston had said it must be worn beneath her clothes. So she tugged at her collar and slipped it beneath her dress so that the medallion nestled on her chest. A surge of strength flooded her, making her fingers tingle. She wondered what to do next. Should she leave the corridor? But she felt a whispered command to put her hand atop the obelisk. Gently, she set her palm down on the pointed tip of the obelisk. The chorus of magic grew louder, stronger, and suddenly the eyes of the leering burned impossibly bright. She winced and closed her eyes, but even through her darkened lids she could still see light from the leering shooting through her hand. In her mind she heard the words, "Your name is Celestine. Guard this name. Never speak it." Another leering beckoned to her from up ahead. Seti ventured deeper into the mist as she approached it. The mist parted to reveal it to her. It was a kind she had never seen before. There were 2 face profiles, pointed in opposite directions, joined by a single head. Both faces looked sneering, angry, menacing. As she approached, she felt she should touch the stone. And as she did, she heard both of the faces mutter a different word.
Apocalyptus. Banir expiare.
The words were spoken resentfully, almost angrily. She invoked the leering again, and the faces repeated the words. She did not understand, so she kept her hand on the leering and invoked it a 3rd time. Again the words were spoken. But this time she understood the meaning. They were both words of power from an ancient language. Apocalyptus meant to reveal that which is hidden or secret, to break past an illusion. The other word, banir expiare, meant to banish by royal decree. To speak it would be to leverage the authority of someone greater, like speaking in the name of the emperor. Now she understood. One would reveal the true name of the Myriad One. The other would banish it. Both words could be spoken by the mind or whispered aloud. Because the beings could hear thoughts, they were affected by the words of power. She remembered when she had first met Fitzroy at the tenement in the Fells. He had driven away the tall ghost, the one without eyes, without saying a word. And only now did she understand how he'd managed it. It was because he had learned the ancient secret for banishing the Myriad Ones. Suddenly the room went black as night. She couldn't see the leering or even her own hands. The darkness was instant, impenetrable. It had happened so quickly that her first instinct was fear. But it made sense. She'd been told she would need to face and banish one of the Myriad Ones, and she knew from experience they could not abide light. A buzzing sound came to her ears. The hair on her arms and neck stood on end. Images from her childhood began to flash vividly through her mind. Her heart raced, and she found herself breathing quickly, fearing the moment the being would enter the confines of the room. In her mind, she saw Mrs. Pullman's evil smile, saw her disdain and loathing. Seti shuddered at the feelings coursing through her body. It was dark. She was alone and helpless.
"Hello, child. Have you missed me?"
Seti's voice felt choked. She couldn't have spoken if she'd wished to, and her limbs seemed frozen in place. Panic welled up inside her.
"Did you think that a few years would make you more powerful than me?" Mrs. Pullman's voice sneered at her. "Only hate grows more powerful with time. Oh, how I hate you, child, what you did to me. It was your fault. You stole everything from me."
Seti didn't understand how Mrs. Pullman was there with her. But her voice was unmistakable, and it brought back all the emotions of helplessness and fear from her childhood. She was a little girl again, trapped in the garret. "I thought you were in prison," Seti pushed out.
"Prison? Is this not a prison, child? The Mastins show no mercy, despite their boasts and claims of it. If you cross them, you are doomed forever."
Seti felt the presence in the room begin to circle her. She could not see Mrs. Pullman, but she could smell her in the air. Was it a lotion she had used? Seti didn't know, but the horrible familiarity of it terrified her even more.
"Oh, and they tricked you, child, just as I tricked you. It's all a web of deceit. They are corrupt. You know they are. They teach humility, but they do not practice it. The proudest of them rule. And you want to be one of them? You want to wear their yoke around your neck?"
Seti felt a wraith-like hand reaching for her heart. If she could have screamed, she would have. Once those ghost fingers touched her chest, they would sink into her skin. They would take something from her. The fingers touched her chest, but a spark of magic sent them jolting away. The pendant.
"I wore one of those, too. When it was yanked away from me, I finally understood what it all meant, how I had been their slave all my life. It was too late for me, child. I had sold my soul and now am forced to live in a body of stone. That will happen to you, too, unless you let me free you. Tell me your true name and I will unlock your trap. Just think the name, and I will hear it."
Seti's mind was whirling with doubts and concerns. How was Mrs. Pullman here? It sounded like her, smelled like her, but could those senses be false? Was this not the very trickery the Aldermaston had warned her about? "You aren't Mrs. Pullman," Seti thought angrily.
"How can you doubt me? You know me. You remember me. Of course I am, child."
"How long have you been trapped here?" She felt a hiss of anger in the thoughts.
"You dare question me? Who are you, insignificant child? You mongrel from the fells, that is where you truly belong. Why would they let someone like you in this place to begin with? You are never going to amount to anything. He will never love you back. Oh, you try to keep your secret from the world, but you cannot keep it from me. I know you've already given your heart to him, and who are you to deserve someone like him? Who are you to take what a Fitzroy wants?"
It was not, Mrs. Pullman. Of course it was not. The myriad one had latched onto her thoughts, her fears, and her strongest emotions. It spouted words that caused shame and self-doubt. A dark art it had no doubt perfected over its long, long life. Why was Seti even listening to it? Apocalyptus, Seti thought.
No!
The evil being shrieked at her mind. The discordant rhythm grated down her spine, like the horrid squeal of violin strings. The storm of rage went silent.
My true name is Tethera the Unborn.
Seti felt the binding on her mouth loosen. Her legs and arms were freed as well. How long have you been bound, Tethera? Seti asked her, her voice shaking a little. Speak truthfully.
300 years, mortal. But I have always existed, as have you. There is darkness in you. I sense it.
Seti had long struggled with feeling the darkness inside her, so she willed the leering to brighten. It began to glow, and the being known as Tethera shrank accordingly. Seti saw it as a pale shadow, a being of energy that swirled like dust motes. The thing hissed and began to slink away from the leering.
The light! It burns! Bind me!
The myriad one couldn't escape the room. As the leering grew brighter, its pain grew worse. It cowered against the wall, shrinking smaller and smaller. Seti stared at it, feeling no remorse or compassion. It would have taken her over if it could. It would have claimed her body as its own. It would have ruined her. Memories from the fells surfaced at that moment, the suffering that she and so many others had endured under the influence of the myriad ones. Most people had no notion there was a way to free themselves.
Banish me! Banish me, mortal! But we will be avenged. We will break free of this prison. The final end has not come. Our queen will be freed once more. Then we will have our vengeance. Vengeance on you all.
Seti saw it shrink even more. Saw steam waft from it. It was a being of pure hatred. There was no limit to its malice. Banir expiare, Seti said, and heard the screech of nails on stone as the leering dragged it back inside the light. The peaceful feeling began to return, but she was still shaken by the ordeal. It was only an imposter. They all were. But how quickly it had deceived her and led her mind and thoughts down a dangerous path. Seti frowned and clenched her fist. She would allow these creatures no more power over her. As her heartbeat slowed and she felt the relief of passing the test, she heard the knowing whisper to her.
You will leave the Abbey grounds.
Banish the myriad one that hunts you.
Chapter 30. Eyeless. The ordeal of the test was over. Seti returned her robe to the teacher awaiting her at the end of the passageway and walked briskly toward the sitting room in the Aldermaston's manor to rejoin her family. The mood on the grounds was subdued. She saw students hugging each other, many of them weeping loudly. She had imagined it would be a moment of celebration. Instead, it was a time of deep emotion and great solemnity. The Abbey felt different to her now as she gazed at it. It was not just a beacon of light. It was also a prison for the unholy. When she reached the study, she found Finia in tears, her handkerchief damp with them. Stephen had a consoling hand on her shoulder, and Lady Merrin was holding her hand. Anna wasn't there, which was confusing. Where could she have gone when all her family was here? Aunt Juliana paced the room and gave Finia a reproachful look. Maybe she hadn't passed?
Seti shut the door gently behind her, but even that quiet sound drew their gaze.
Of course, she passed, Phineas said, sniffling.
It was said with resentment and misery. Stephen gave Seti a wary look, but he said nothing.
There you are,
Lady Merrin said, coming away from Phineas and embracing Seti.
I've been watching the door for you. It's over. You passed?
There wasn't a speck of doubt in her voice. Seti nodded, but felt uneasy expounding upon her answer.
It was awful, Phineas wailed. How could they expect us to confront our fears like that? I'm never leaving the clouds again. Not in 100 years. Not if we have to deal with those things.
Lady Merrin turned and gave her daughter a reproachful look.
You have good reason to be upset, Phineas.
But you have no one else to blame but yourself, Juliana said.
Sister, let me handle this, Merrin said.
You are her mother. You are supposed to be gentle with her. I'm her aunt, and that entitles me to speak the truth for her own good. I love you, Phineas, but I'm not at all surprised you didn't pass. Ever since you were small, you've been more interested in dancing and balls than serious study. Well, you've reaped what you have sown. Some consequences come soon, some come later. Better to realize your faults now and improve upon them.
Phineas's expression crumpled, and she buried her face in her kerchief and sobbed again.
That didn't help, Merrin sighed out.
Maybe, but it felt good to finally say it.
The two sisters looked at each other and shared a secret smile, though Merrin was quick to drop hers.
What does it mean for her?
Stephen asked, his arm coming around his sister protectively.
It won't hurt her prospects very much, Lady Merrin said with a sigh. Our family has a good reputation and considerable wealth. She won't be ignored.
But what will I do, Mother? Phineas said through her tears. I'm so ashamed. How can I face my friends?
Lady Merrin glanced at Juliana again.
Phineas, dearest, most years only half of the students pass the test. You are far from the only one.
Is that supposed to make me feel better?
Phineas wailed.
Merrin approached her daughter again and cupped her chin.
I know it doesn't. I know your heart is hurting, and that grieves me too. But Aunt Juliana is right. For a long time, you've been more preoccupied with the wrong things. You weren't prepared for the test, you know that. I don't need to say it. But it troubles me that you are only worried about the social consequences.
She gave her a serious look.
Instead, you should be worrying about how to improve, how to better hear the whispers from the mysteries, how to be more aware of the feelings of others. It's not impossible to take the test again in the future. It's just that most people choose not to because they failed once. It makes them afraid to try.
Lady Merrin bit her lip and then pulled Phineas into a hug. Phineas started to sob again from disappointment, and Seti felt the room growing too stifling for her. She had been told to leave the Abbey grounds, and she still hadn't obeyed. Her nerves were tightening with worry the more she procrastinated. Juliana gave her a wink as she slipped out the door, unnoticed by the others, who were still carrying on over Phineas. Seti smiled back. She walked out of the manor and started toward the apple orchard. Summer was in full bloom early, but there was a chill in her heart as she acknowledged what she was going to do. She had not faced her greatest fear in the Abbey. No. Hers lurked beyond the safety of its borders. As she tramped through the grass, she thought about what Lady Merrin had revealed. Only half the students typically passed the test. She had always assumed most of them did. Perhaps it was a carefully guarded secret, a mystery itself. Certainly, knowledge of the odds would have increased the students' anxiety. Each person was given a chance, a choice. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw Mr. Skrelling walking toward her. She was not in the mood to entertain his persistent advances.
"Good afternoon, Mr. Skrelling," she said curtly when he arrived. She didn't alter her pace. I heard that you also passed the test, Miss Seti, he said cheerfully. His use of the word also implied he, too, had been successful.
Congratulations, Mr. Skrelling.
Congratulations are in order for you as well. I also received the glad news from Sloane and Teitelbaum that my employment with them has been secured. I will not be enlisted to join the war effort. I'm quite relieved.
I'm sure you are, she said evenly, thinking of Adam and wondering where he had gone.
I should hope to see you in the near future if you'll permit me to call on you. At Fog Willows, as you said, I will continue to hunt for your mother. My determination is strong, and I am, if nothing else, persistent.
Indeed, you are, she replied with a grudging smile.
Where are you off to, if you don't mind my asking? Would you prefer to be alone?
She was not about to tell him her mission. I'd like to be alone, she agreed, not divulging anything more.
Ah, yes. Well then, as you wish.
He bowed his head, gave her a crooked smile, and then went the other way. His clumsiness and awkwardness were almost endearing. He wasn't a bad fellow, despite everything. After he was gone, she reached the orchard. A little nudge to her thoughts sent her to the right. She followed the new path, and in the distance she could see the old abbey kitchen with smoke coming from the cupola. The look of the aged stone had always appealed to her. It gave the grounds personality, as did the street of Vicar's Close. From her current vantage point, she could also see the fields of lavender, the archery butts, the gardens. A feeling of sadness and longing welled up inside of her. She would be leaving Mirwood soon on a tempest piloted by Stephen. The beautiful chapter in her life was ending. What she wouldn't do to bring the feeling of the abbey with her. Touching her breast, she felt the edges of the Maston symbol against her skin. In a way, she was bringing it with her. It had become an essential part of her. The feeling guided her through a copse of oak trees that formed a little park. There was a walking path that led through it, and so she followed it to the lookout point where there were benches for resting and a leering marking the edge of a cliff. She had been there many times before to enjoy the view of the small valley below. She was alone. Students were packing their things and preparing to vacate Vicar's Close. Seti's trunks were already packed and ready. No word had arrived from Sarah, but Seti had packed the rest of her things for her, missing her fiercely all the while.
Climb down.
The whisper brushed against her mind. She was a little confused by the impulse, but she obeyed it and walked toward the leering at the edge of the cliff. It radiated its warning about the danger of the cliff, but she silenced it with a thought. Passing around it, she noticed a few jagged rocks that looked climbable. She stepped down on the first and noticed a second. Then she passed the second and saw a third. Soon she was low enough that she couldn't even see the benches above her. Which was when she realized the boulder she stood on was hovering in the air. Her stomach thrilled for a moment, and she had a feeling of vertigo that made her sway. She touched the side of the mountain to center herself, and then carefully climbed down to the next rock. It took several minutes to climb down the cliffside, boulder by boulder, but the floating stones held up by the mysteries were there to mark a path. When she reached the bottom, she was inundated with the noises coming from the woods. These were wild sounds, the chirping of loud insects, the squawk of birds. These were not the tame sounds of the vibrant gardens kept by the school. This was wilderness. It was like the woods she had crossed with Colton Forshee and the Crusader Orb. She hesitated, not certain what to do. There was a mound nearby, overgrown and full of ferns. A few stunted trees grew in it. She paused, and then she felt the urge to keep walking, even though there wasn't a path. She trudged through the undergrowth, snapping small twigs and feeling her hem catch on brambles. The sensation of eyes following her sent a shiver down her back as she walked. The woods became thicker, a mass of unruly oaks. Squirrels chittered and seemed to warn her not to go.
The air smelled strong and pungent of dirt and detritus. She made a horrible racket as she walked, but she felt herself going a certain direction. No logical reason led her. Her heart knew the right.